You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, September 17th, 2025. It's another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. Or perhaps by app or podcast or website or social media. However you got here, glad you got here. I got a question for you. Did you notice the change in seasons recently? Not fall. No, not the school year. No, not football. Campaign season. We have not one, but two campaign announcements on this program to share with you this morning. The first one is just a couple of minutes old. State Representative Francesca Hong making it official. She is a candidate for Wisconsin governor, and she will be joining us in the 8:30 half hour to talk about her run. We will play her introductory video in just a bit. We had to censor it first. If you know anything about Francesca Hong, it's that she's very, very, she does not pull punches when she speaks. How about that? We will also be talking to Corrine Hendrickson. She is a now former child care provider in the New Glarus area. And of course, she has been quite frustrated with the state of politics in our Wisconsin legislature when it comes to looking out for working families. She made it official on this show that she would have to close up her child care center, that it was just no longer something where, well, she didn't want to lose money. Nobody does want to. And so she's had to close up her child care center. And now she's ready for what's next. And she has an announcement that she's going to be making on our program this morning as well. So campaign season for 2026 is definitely underway. And we are one of the places where candidates stop on their way to 2026. So we hope you stick around and hear what Francesca Hong and Corrine Hendrickson have to say. If you can't stick around for everything, you can always pod the program, head over to Spotify, sign up there, or Apple, wherever you get your podcast, and that way you have us on demand wherever you go. Also coming up on the program today, we have our homeroom segment. We will be talking to Bryn Horton from the Wisconsin Public Education Network about what else is happening in the state capitol along the lines of education. You know, the state budget's done, but there's all kinds of bills that legislators have been introducing that could affect the way that your kids get an education. Some could be helpful, some could be meh, some could be just downright annoying or nuisance, or even harmful to public education, undermining public education. So Bryn Horton will talk to us about that in our 7:30 half hour. And of course, it's Wednesday, so we have no shortage of Civic Media friends to visit with as well to tell us what's going on in their respective necks of the woods. There's James Kelly reporting from Chippewa Falls. There's Earl Ingram in Milwaukee, Jimmy Koska in Boscobel looking at sports and news in Southwest Wisconsin, and Melissa Kay from our sister station in Wisconsin Rapids on Parker Olson, producer of this program. What is National Pet Bird Day? Yeah.
What?
So we're hoping for a big update on Lilu here. Yes.
That's fantastic. Who knew there was Pet Bird Day? That's so specific.
If we've learned nothing from our history segment, Eric Bailey history lesson is that there is a day for everything. And I don't even read them all because there's so many of them. I mean, there could be National Retro Bar Coaster Day, as I hold up a coaster that I don't know where we got this back in the 1980s, but
are cool though. That would be around. A good day.
Got to put your coffee cup on something now and then. So yeah, it's Pet Bird Day. There's a day for everything. Lovely. Here's what there's not a day for.
Uh-oh.
Publishers Clearinghouse and the Prize Patrol bringing a great big oversized check to your door and promising that you're going to get so many thousands of dollars for life. So many people have believed this over the years. The look I'm getting from Parker tells me the prize patrol is not a thing. Correct?
Right. Nope. Over my head. Not a clue.
Well, that's because this was run by Publishers Clearinghouse, which is a magazine sales company.
Okay.
When was the last time you subscribed to a magazine? I'm sorry. Let me restate the question.
Have
you ever subscribed to a paper magazine that was delivered to you in the mail and that you sat leisurely and flipped through?
Hard no, no. On that one. Yeah.
No, because you already have that with you right there. Here it is. It's that little phone, that little device that can bring up anything from anywhere. So basically every magazine is now a website or an app or social media posts. And so Publishers Clearinghouse, which for years was, you know, the place where you would get your magazine subscriptions, they'd send you this mailer. I'm explaining this to Parker, but don't you're like, what's he gonna do? Yes
ancient history.
They would send you, it's important, once a year they'd send you this and big envelope all filled with all kinds of flyers about all the money you could win and all the great deals on magazines. You could get TV Guide, Newsweek and Time and Sports Illustrated and Popular Mechanics, and then there'd be the sheet with all these stamps on it, each one with a different magazine cover, and kind of like we talked about with Columbia House with the records, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Using the mail was like how you did all this stuff, Parker, back in the day before there was email, when it wasn't electronic, when it was lick a stamp, put it on the card, mail it in, you get your discounted Sports Illustrated just in time for the swimsuit issue, but you're also entered for the possibility that the prize patrol could show up. Sure. And as they took great pains to say, you didn't even have to buy a magazine. You just had to send the envelope back and you were entered into the sweepstakes. Hmm. And then, of course, you know, you'd get a knock on your door. Well, you wouldn't. It never happened to me. But, you know, there would be, you know, somebody there with a great big check and TV cameras and balloons and everything else, all set to give you money, which included sometimes rather than one big check, it would be so much, you know, per life, like $5,000 a month for the rest of your life, which, okay, again, it's not that you'd necessarily retire on it, but that's a pretty nice thing to have along.
Did
you know?
People actually win this, or was this just something that they said?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Which gets us to today's story.
Oh, boy.
Publishers Clearinghouse is no more.
Aww.
It has gone bankrupt.
I wonder why.
And now we do know why, but you know who else really wonders about this? All the people who were promised cash for life and are now shocked to find out that promise is being broken.
Yeah.
So the remnants of Publishers Clearinghouse went through its bankruptcy process and some other company bought it, a company called ARB, and ARB says, well, we still want like the direct mail part of the company and the online parts of the company, but we're not buying the part of the company that's responsible for making payouts. So that part is still bankrupt, and the people who were promised forever checks are not going to get them. In their Chapter 11 filing, Publishers Clearinghouse listed at least 10 prize winners among its creditors with the largest unsecured claims, totaling millions of dollars. One man who won $5,000 a week forever back in 2012 told the New York Times he knew something was funny when he didn't get his annual check from the company back in January, so he has had to scramble to pay the bills without the money that he has learned to rely on for the past 13 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's running out. CNN has a story about somebody who's had to sell all of their toys, their jet skis and their boats. And he said, I haven't worked in 10 years. I have to go to work now. And he has no marketable skills.
Yeah.
To get into the job market.
Well, if he had a bunch of boats, maybe he could start like doing boat tours.
Do a marina or something, yeah. But he's got nothing to gas up the boats with. So this all dates back to 1953 when a couple, Harold and Luester Mertz, and their daughter Joyce formed a business out of their home in Long Island to send direct-to-consumer mailings that solicited subscribers for a number of magazines, and then they would get a little cut of each magazine subscription. And it grew and it grew, and they started doing these contests in 1967. And all throughout the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s, I mean, everybody would buy their, even if they, you know, just wanted to renew one magazine or something, and they'd always hope that maybe. This was in the years, of course, before multi-state lotteries and billion-dollar jackpots, and you just hoped that lightning would strike,
yeah,
and, you know, Ed McMahon or somebody would be at your door to give you the big check and money for life, unless people stop buying magazines and we ain't got no more money to pay you with.
I assume that inflation happened quite a bit during the time of them doing this.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Did they start with, because you said it was like the 50s, did they start with like, here's a dollar a week? Ha ha, see?
They started in the 50s. The contest started in 1967, which tells me that, I mean, that was the heyday for magazines. I mean, everybody had magazine subscriptions and newspaper subscriptions. And I
turn around here and tell you.
Oh, boy. He's looking behind himself. He's reaching to the floor for our listeners at home. And now he has something here.
I still get a paper copy of Atlantic Monthly.
Yeah.
Of course, I picked one that has a nuclear explosion.
I was going to say, is that a bomb?
Well, it's marking 80 years of the nuclear era and how scary it is to have
a goofball with his
finger on the button. Yeah. So I still get it. Although, by and large, when I see interesting articles from the Atlantic, I'm going to go to their app and read it on my phone. But there was just that part of me. It's like, you know, I feel like I got to have some. And frankly, I do. Sometimes when we travel or whatnot, it's, you know, when you got to put your phone in airplane mode, it's nice to have that to look at. But no, people don't anymore. So, yeah, by the 60s, they had enough money that they could set up a contest, figured interest rates would go up, so their savings would go up, so there'd always be something to pay out until it didn't happen anymore. From Tony on YouTube. I used to subscribe to the international version of Newsweek. Now they don't make any version of a physical magazine. Yeah. No, they do not. You still see them in the bookstores. If you go to, Barnes & Noble?
Yeah.
I mean, the racks are full of these magazines. I don't know who's buying them. They're very specialty-based.
Probably dentist office. That's the only place I can think of.
Somebody's got to be buying them, right? So... Anyway, I'm sorry if I'm the bearer of bad news for folks, but if you were counting on your publisher's clearinghouse money to keep you going, I might suggest going to get a physical newspaper and looking through the want ads because it's time to find some work. Let's check some sports now at 6:18. Christian Yelich hit home run number 29 and had 3 RBIs. All-star pitcher Freddie Peralta struck out 10 over 6 innings. He won his National League leading 17th game as the Brewers beat up on the Los Angeles Angels 9-2 last night. Freddie Peralta looked good. He allowed 1 run on just 2 hits. He walked only 2. He struck out the side in 3 different innings. William Contreras had 2 RBIs. There were other key swings by Sal Frelick, Caleb Durbin, Andrew Vaughn, and Jackson Churio. Brandon Woodruff will get the start in tonight's Game 2, and you can catch that at, I believe, 6:05. Yes, right there, 6:05. Pregame of the Brewers versus the Angels on stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. I predict another win, Parker. I think we're looking good. The magic number is now, it's Cubs 1, but the magic number drops to 7.
So, yeah. Is your elbow, does it have a little twinge of win in it?
A little bit, yeah. The bursitis is telling me this is what we're going to get today. Yeah, exactly. Okay, we will talk a bit about monopoly money and inflation and corporate America and what they all have in common coming up next. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
The Milwaukee Brewers were winners yesterday over the Los Angeles Angels. 9-2 was the final. Brandon Woodruff looked good, pitched 5 innings, gave up only 2 hits and 1 run, 9 strikeouts. Sal Frelick hit a 3-run homer. Blake Perkins had a career high 5 RBIs, and the two teams will face off one more time. The third and final game of the series is this evening at American Family Field, 6:05. The pregame coverage begins on several Civic Media radio stations. Well, I've made it this long, but we couldn't resist or stay away from the trouble. I mean, the seriously constitutional trouble that is Congressman Derek Van Orden. And I really have to tip my cap to my old colleagues at WEAU Channel 13 in Eau Claire, because I have picked on them. I have picked on Channels 18 and 19 in Eau Claire and La Crosse. I have picked on WKBT Channel 8 for their coverage of Derek Van Orden, which has been, over the past, you know, 2+ years, pretty soft when it comes to just covering, you know, when he shows up on a farm and tours the farm and gets to talk about how, you know, I'm just here fighting for the farmers, when there's nothing in his record that indicates that. And there's been very little said about his belligerence and, frankly, conduct unbecoming a congressman. But he has definitely crossed a line, and I'm very happy that the folks at Channel 13 took note of that and reached out to the congressman to talk about all of the threats that he's been making on social media, and celebrating the times that people have been fired and threatening to defund places, including cities like Eau Claire in his district, because he does not like how people have expressed themselves over the Charlie Kirk murder, which, by the way, they have a right to do, unless you're Derek Van Orden, who has taken a U.S. law, a federal law about domestic terrorism, and he now views it through the prism of saying anything critical about Charlie Kirk, or frankly, Republicans or the president, equates with domestic terrorism. You don't believe me? Give a listen to this bit of an excerpt from the WEAU 13 News report, talking to Derek Van Orden and trying to start by asking him about all these posts from people who were expressing opinions, but that in and of itself is not threatening language. That is not domestic terrorism. But listen to how condescending Derek Van Orden gets with the reporter about that.
We asked the congressman about these posts, saying they don't seem to be calling for violence. Here's what he said.
I'm going to say this one more time. If you look up the U.S. code and read it, it is crystal clear that what they are saying falls under this U.S. statute. So it's a little frustrating when I have clearly intelligent people like yourself who can read, that you don't do your homework before you conduct this interview.
That was a congressman saying that. Now, I'm not surprised, but I hope a few people are, that have finally heard that this is how this guy actually talks. This is how this guy actually acts. Now, let me take care of the personal part first, the jackassery that is Derek Van Orden, when he says, you know, clearly intelligent people like yourself who you can read, but you don't do your homework. I mean, apart from that being a jerk move, the premise on which he bases those insults is completely flawed. And of course, note how he can't defend it. He just says, well, if you read the code, it is crystal clear that what they're saying falls under this statute. And the reporters ask him again and again to connect the dots. What is it about this language in this statute that indicates that this is somehow against the law, that this is somehow threatening behavior, that this is somehow, you know, providing resources for terrorist acts rather than a mere expression of opinion? And he can't do it. He can't do it. He's asked repeatedly. And if you go to another clip of the interview where Bob Gallagher is trying to get him to clarify his statement, he just talks over Bob. It's, again, this is part of the Ron Johnson, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance school, is you just talk over the person so much that they finally give up trying to ask the question. But they don't answer the question. They know the question that's being asked of them. Prove that this is somehow actual threatening behavior, much less domestic terrorism. And they can't do it. But they've got power right now, and they're using it. Again, when Derek Van Orden uses social media to insult and belittle people, well, that just makes him a jerk. But he's a member of Congress. He's part of the government. The First Amendment says the government shall not infringe on freedom of speech. But that's what he, as part of the government, wants to do. And he does not like being called out for it. But he's got the power. And it's only it's a sense of power that's only going to grow. It's an ego that's only going to grow. It's condescension that's only going to grow with the news that yesterday ABC capitulated, surrendered, kowtowed, bent the knee, and pulled Jimmy Kimmel off the air. By the way, not for something he said. Do not fool yourself into thinking that ABC pulled him for the specific thing that they say that he said. Now, we could talk about the remark. I'm not going to. You go look at the remark and you look in there and you see again, what is it that is so over the line that it's worth even a day's suspension, much less being pulled off the network indefinitely? It's not about what Jimmy Kimmel said. It's what Brendan Carr, the head of the FCC, a Donald Trump loyalist, said in threatening ABC, and prior to that, threatening CBS, and prior to that, threatening other media. The head of the FCC, which licenses broadcast stations right now, is not in any way, shape, or form independent or looking out for the freedom of broadcasters and their First Amendment rights to share expressions in the arena of ideas. Brendan Carr, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, Derek Van Orden, and others are in the business right now of trying to silence critics through intimidation, through prosecution, through fear, and through falsehoods. And corporate America just gave up again with another late night comic. And they're not going to stop there until more people, including the people at some of these corporations, finally begin pushing back and standing up for themselves and for our Constitution. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north. Tomorrow, of course, we'll have our regular Week in Review panel with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalists Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze, Courier Newsroom's Kia Vakil, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Mike Clemens with sports, Brittany Merlot's weekend forecast. Just a lot to tune into tomorrow. If you can't stick around, then put us on a podcast. Head over to Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure you follow Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Today, a federal committee that recommends vaccine policy for Americans is going to start meeting to review immunizations that have been in use for a very long time. It's called the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, and it's expected to vote on shots for COVID and hepatitis B, as well as others. And of course, as we've talked about, the health secretary, Robert Kennedy Jr., has frequently baselessly questioned the safety of these vaccines. And yesterday, you'll recall, we played a clip from Senator Tammy Baldwin talking to Susan Menares, who was ousted as head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention after less than a month, because Menares says Kennedy directed her to commit in advance to approving everything this ACIP board is about to recommend, regardless of the scientific evidence. With this ongoing campaign trying to undermine public faith in vaccines, it's worth going back to basics and finding out just what vaccines are, what it is that makes them work the way that they do. And that fits right in the wheelhouse of pediatrician Dr. Kelly Snooks, who is beginning a new video series for Up North News called Raising Wisconsin. And her latest installment, which was posted yesterday, talks all about vaccines. We're going to give a listen to that before we talk live with Dr. Kelly Snooks.
Hey, Wisconsinites, have you ever wondered exactly what's happening inside your body after you get a vaccine? Like, how is it working to protect you? I'm Dr. Kelly Stokes, board-certified pediatrician, and you're here with this week's Raising Wisconsin. Now, let's talk about how vaccines actually work. The vaccines we get today protect us against so many viruses and bacteria, and each vaccine contains what we call an antigen for the disease that it's meant to protect you against. It might be a weakened or killed part of that germ, or even a tiny piece of its genetic material. These antigens essentially mimic the illness, and they sound an alarm to your body's immune system. Your immune system creates what we call antibodies against that particular virus or bacteria. That way, the next time your body encounters the actual illness, it's like, wait a minute, I know what to do with this. Then the antibodies that you've stored up, thanks to that vaccine, spring into action and prevent that virus or bacteria from making you severely ill. It's your body's way of building a powerful defense without having to get really sick first.
That again is Dr. Kelly Snooks, who joins us now to talk about the Raising Wisconsin series she's doing for Up North News. Dr. Snooks, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me. I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much. So nice to have you here and have you doing this series for us. We're going to talk much more generally about the series, but with vaccines in the news lately, I just wanted to check, certainly with my wife being a physician, I'm imagining that you, like her, have probably had that basic vaccines 101 conversation more so recently, maybe than in years past. It's always been a thing, helping parents understand vaccines, but understanding how vaccines work seems to be much more in the public consciousness these days.
Yeah, you know, I think there has been a lot of discussion about vaccines lately, as we've seen with what's going on today. And I think that people are starting to get a lot of information and misinformation and really starting to question what is real and what is not. So these conversations about how vaccines work, what do they actually protect us against, have become far more common now than they were when I was even just doing general pediatrics during my residency training.
And yes, obviously it's part of the world that we live in now. There's a lot more information, therefore misinformation. And even if it's not misinformation, again, I think every doctor winces when a patient comes in and they got a referral from Dr. Google. And Dr. Google said, here's what you have. And then you have to maybe explain that it that may not necessarily be the case. So let's be sympathetic to the patients there. We're surrounded by more information than ever before. So what kind of guidelines do you like to offer your own patients when it comes to what they read and hear versus what they could hear through a visit to your office?
Yeah, you know, I think there's reassurance, right? That, like you had said, there's so much information at their fingertips, and they're not wrong to be concerned and look up this information to try and help them understand things a little bit better. I think when it comes to having those conversations with patients, you know, we in medical school go through so much training on how to actually understand what studies have been gone through rigorous testing, you know, what is some of the evidence that actually works to show that these treatments or vaccines, for example, are safe versus those that, you know, are maybe not as safe, or what studies are out there that are the ones that people are getting a hold of and being concerned about, that actually those studies are not as rigorous or actually have some really big flaws to them. So, you know, I think it's just that reassurance that you're okay to look this stuff up, but let's kind of go over what is the actual evidence behind these treatments or recommendations that we're giving you.
Yeah, exactly. And go through it together, go through the information, because, and this is the awkward part to bring up, but it certainly reminds us of the early months of the pandemic. Science, researchers, doctors, they're not infallible. And as we learned early on in the COVID pandemic, we were still learning our way through that. But that's not the same as being uninformed. It's simply taking you where the science takes you to next. And so lest listeners are saying, oh, there goes another physician and another physician spouse with some kind of a, you know, superiority complex or whatever. No, there's still things we don't know out there. But the alternative is not to just go based on innuendos and rumors and things like that, right?
Right. You know, one of the things that I think we call ourselves in medicine is lifelong learners, because medicine is constantly evolving, but the reason that it's evolving is because, you know, science has advanced so much over the past couple of centuries. I actually talk about that in one of my past videos, but the way that science is evolving, the way that these studies are going on, you know, we are also learning, and our recommendations might be changing because of new evidence that we have learned from new studies or new treatments that are out there.
We're talking to Dr. Kelly Snooks. She's a pediatrician and is doing a video series for Up North News called Raising Wisconsin, which leads to this question. Doctors are busy people. You guys have been studying forever. You work in these long days. And now you're doing a video series, and you've been making videos on the internet for some time now. You're not the only doctor doing it, but can you talk to us about why you decided to get onto social media to start bringing these information to folks when, you know, you could have just sat in an office with a clipboard all day, but you've decided to be more proactive. What motivated you?
Yeah, you know, I think social media is a tool that you realize that you can reach so many people. I am a pediatric intensive care unit doctor, so I am seeing really sick kids, and a lot of what I'm seeing is actually preventable. So one of the first ways that I took to social media was actually for gun violence prevention because of what I was seeing at the bedside. And I think social media is one of those unique tools that can bring people together to connect, but then also has this reach that you can't even imagine, like how far your videos are actually going and being seen. And I think it's another way for us to just spread information and awareness about what is going on in the world, what's going on in public health. And as a pediatrician, public health and almost all these policy changes actually impact child health in a way that I don't think people can maybe understand or see. So it's my goal to kind of break that down and say, hey, here's what's actually going on, and here's how this can actually impact children.
What kinds of things would you like to emphasize in the Raising Wisconsin series? Things that either you've already done to start the series or things that you hope to do in the near future?
Yeah, so things that we've already done. So we have a few videos that are already out. One is just about like traveling safe during the summer. You know, people are hitting the road, they are flying, airplanes are full of germs. So how do you stay safe when you're flying? And then also the history of vaccines is another one that's been out there. So where did vaccines come from in the first place? We go through the details of the overlap between the cowpox virus and the smallpox virus back from the 1700s. So we go into detail on that. And then the one that you had just recently played about how vaccines actually work. It's not going to be all about vaccines. We're also going to cover other topics as well. Seasonal allergies will be coming up, how to stay safe in the car as far as car seats and safety go, bug bites, things along those lines. So everything from general health and wellness about children to some of the stuff that's going on. And I would like to know what other people want to see too, really addressing viewers' comments too, to try and get on those topics.
Yeah, that's been a real focus of the videos, is inviting people to share their own questions that can be addressed later on in the series. Dr. Kelly Snooks is with us. Tell us a bit about your own background and where you grew up, what led you to become a physician and go to med school.
Yeah, so I am originally from the south side of Chicago, you know, grew up a little girl that I think just was, you know, that basic, I think I want to be a doctor when I grow up, and I stuck with it. I chose pediatrics and did my pediatrics training on the south side of Chicago because, you know, children really don't have that much impact on their health in the future. A lot of the decisions that we make as an adult impact how they end up in the future. And I think that as a pediatrician, we have that unique ability to advocate for our patients to ensure that they can live healthy and fulfilling lives in the future. So that's why I chose pediatrics and went through that. I did medical school and my pediatrics training in Chicago, and then came up here to Milwaukee for my ICU training, and have been here ever since. So yeah, that's why I kind of went that route.
And in working as a pediatrician, you talk about the things that you've seen in the ICU, and so many times they are preventable. And we did, again, share some of the audio from people who, including the former chief medical officer of the Centers for Disease Control, Dr. Howery. And the soundbite concluded talking about, you know, how many more children are getting the measles and sometimes getting complications and sometimes dying unnecessarily, and that we're seeing that uptick. And we're in a state here in Wisconsin, which I think would shock a lot of people, that when it comes to measles immunizations heading into kindergarten, our rate is low enough now that it doesn't meet the standard for what's called herd immunity. So can you talk a bit about just measles and kids and getting up to date on those vaccinations and the danger if that vaccination rate sinks as low as it has in Wisconsin?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think since the time that I've been in Wisconsin or in Milwaukee, and that's since 2018, you know, we've had already two measles outbreaks. And like you said, our vaccination rates are really low in Milwaukee, below that herd immunity. Basically, that herd immunity rate is that enough people are protected against measles that if one individual were to get the measles, the rest of the community is protected enough that we will likely be able to overcome that and we won't see a large outbreak. Measles can be very scary when children get it. It can cause, you know, brain damage and ultimately death from that measles virus. And that's why we emphasize so much those kindergartners, you know, and actually even younger, you get it at 1 year to start getting that measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine to protect themselves against these severe illnesses that they to those that are even younger. So if you think about the children that are under one that haven't been immunized yet against the measles, mumps, and rubella, those individuals are even more so at risk because when we don't have that herd immunity, then they also don't even have the chance to get themselves vaccinated yet. There are some unique circumstances, so I recommend everybody talking to their pediatrician about that if you're under a year old and want to get your child vaccinated against the measles.
Absolutely. And again, for more, you can check out the Raising Wisconsin video series on the Up North News social media feeds and send in your questions as well that Dr. Kelly Snooks can use for a future video installment. Kelly, it's great to talk to you again. Thank you so much for all you do. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for having me, you as well.
All right. Good to have you here. Coming up in our next hour, we will talk to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets and what does it really mean that the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates a little bit yesterday as the economy sits on the verge of stagflation. Plus, Joe Zepecki and more. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is normally the time you hear me say you should sign up for our newsletter at Up North News by going to upnorthnewswi.com and clicking subscribe in the banner at the top of the homepage. But I'm not going to say that. Kind of did. Instead, I'm going to tell you Civic Media now has a new daily newsletter filled with all kinds of links to some of the highlights from shows of the previous day, guests that are coming up, and so much more. It's on Substack, so sign up at civicmediatoday.substack.com and be part of Civic Media's new daily newsletter. Let's talk about your money and the markets after the opening bell here with Sean O'Malley and that ever-loving stagflation that appears to be hanging on. I mean, you've got the Fed cutting interest rates a quarter point, but I mean, nothing in there says to me, well, that should take care of inflation, you know, and you've got a sluggish job market. I sense a lot of treading water still.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing, Pat. They're trying to not make any sudden moves. I mean, I think part of it is they're probably a little bit afraid of doing what they did back in 2022, where they kept raising rates and far further than anyone expected them to. And far more aggressively, and they really overshot the mark then. So they're trying to take a more measured response this time. Certainly, you know, they're making the administration, the current administration, happy with that move. But yeah, it's sort of a placate to the soft employment market without too much of a raise in rates so that you're going to make inflation even worse than it already is. So there are a lot of factors in play, but we know that everyone is looking and expecting an overall softer economy going forward.
Well, especially when you've got the, like we like to say, the, on the one hand, inflation, on the other hand, you know, employment. And now you've got this, while you've got things in both hands, you've got the third thing is political pressure, you know, punching you in the gut while you're looking at the things in your two hands here. So, I mean, it's not an easy time to try to actually manage the economy.
Very true, although some would describe that target as a little lower than the gut, but yes.
yes. I try to make these things radio-friendly where I can. And finally, let's conclude with Tariff Watch, the tax tally. Tariffs are taxes on the American consumer, and what's the tote board looking like?
Yeah, this is going to be a new segment that that I want to do monthly, so we'll keep track of how much we as consumers have had to pay in additional taxes through the tariffs. So this is going to be the Tariff Watch tax tally. Lots of alliteration there to make it easy to remember. So the Tariff Watch tax tally as of the end of August is $183.6 billion.
So that's without a farm bailout.
That's without the farm bailout. If you include the farm bailout, most of the experts are saying you're going to need at least double that. Ooh. So, you know, are we winning yet?
I don't believe we're winning.
We're screwing over every trading partner we've got, a lot of our allies, and making ourselves obsolete in the process. And I'm just wondering what's going to happen in the future when you try to reestablish commerce with a lot of these trading partners that have now since moved on.
And even if they come back, there'll be the mistrust. And I know we talked about it last week in conclusion, but it really sticks with me. As you drive around here, you drive around and you see cornfields, but you see a lot of soybean fields, and those soybeans,
yep.
I mean, it's looking good. It's looking good until they're either left rotting in the field or piling up and rotting, because I believe the tote board for China ordering soybeans, does that tote board still read zero as far as we know?
It still reads zero, Pat. That's correct. And remember, you've got to consider that they are the world's biggest buyer of soybeans. But they have decided, and I'm sure this is supported by, you know, President Xi Jinping of China, that they're not going to order a single soybean from the U.S., which seems to be what's happening. And they ordered everything from Brazil instead. And I know exactly what you're talking about with respect to those fields. I drive, you know, past them between the two houses. I see tons of corn out there. I see tons of soybeans, and nothing has been harvested yet. And I'm wondering, will it?
I'm wondering, speaking of Brazil, maybe we could we import their Supreme Court?
I think we should enter negotiations to trade for that. Certainly a Supreme Court with a backbone willing to uphold the rule of law. What a novel concept. That could be something that we could consider.
Yeah, against a former president trying to stage a coup. Boy, a Supreme Court exchange would be grand. Sean O'Malley, finance and economics expert, joining us on Thursday mornings. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. Take care.
All right. Yep. Good to see you. It is 8:40 right now, and we'll talk more about the state of geopolitics, media politics, whatever you want to call it, with Joe Zepecki. Joe, I think I finally learned my lesson. I'm no longer going to ask, how are you? I keep looking for the perfect answer to how are you. I think the right thing is to just stop asking and to find a new opening question.
Yeah.
Because there's no great answer to that one, especially after recent events involving, a president pushing another talk show host off the air and a congressman continuing to use the First Amendment like toilet paper.
Yeah, you know, a week ago, we had a pretty hard conversation in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination. Mm-hmm. And my take on it was that we just need to declare and decide these are politically violent times, and that acceptance of that reality is the first step in finding our way out of a politically violent period of time. And so if you ask 1 week later, have things gotten better or worse in the wake of Kirk's murder, the answer is unequivocally that things have gotten worse. That what has happened in the last week is not concerning. It is deeply alarming. This is happening. And what I'm talking about specifically in the last 24 hours is the government, the federal government, threatening broadcasters, corporations in this country who air things like comedy, and saying, you have taken part in speech we disagree with, and so we can do this the hard way or the easy way. And the capitulation by ABC and Disney to pull Jimmy Kimmel off the air for a joke about Donald Trump that was, if we're being honest, like pretty benign.
Yeah.
Wasn't a great joke. Right?
It wasn't a reason. It was an excuse.
It was an excuse. And for Brendan Carr, the head of the FCC, who in the past has said things which demonstrate he understands we are in a very bad place if the government is trying to engage in censorship. And now, as the head of the FCC is engaging in that censorship himself, we have crossed another red line, and We just need to be as clear-eyed about that and about the current threat to the First Amendment this week as we were about the fact that we live in politically violent times last week.
Yeah, and it's not going to get better anytime soon. And here's one way it's not going to get better. And I wish I had better news for folks, but I have to say, here's how it's not going to get better. In the wake of Charlie Kirk's murder, there was a lot of talk about Charlie Kirk's record, his legacy, his quotes. And in normal times, that would have eventually faded and people would have focused more on, we can't have this kind of political violence in the country. And we would all unite around that. But instead, what is happening right now is that as you're seeing this, vengeance campaign that puts the First Amendment in a wood chipper and starts getting people fired and shows canceled and organizations threatened with defunding, the response to that is going to be, you know what? Let's remind ourselves what these people were saying. And Charlie Kirk's words are going to come back. I've already seen this online. People going, hey, by the way, before we turn this guy into a martyr, before we turn him into a saint, here's a reminder of what he had to say. And that's simply going to incense the people on the right even more. But I think that's the next step, is to remind people we are not doing the deification of Charlie Kirk. We're not doing it today, and we're not doing it tomorrow.
Think about the extraordinary privilege one has to have people in the wake of their passing, whether untimely in the case of Charlie Kirk, or at the end of a very long life, like Robert Redford, who we lost this week. And to have people be trying to figure out what your legacy is, and what your time here meant while you were here. That is fine to do. And the notion that people who are just saying, this is what Charlie Kirk had to say about this issue, whether that's gun control versus the Second Amendment, whether that is his constitutionally protected, even if, by my count, pretty gross take on members of the trans community or the intelligence of Black women, to have people engage in a dialogue and share the things that that person said when they were with us be grounds for you're going to lose your opportunity to make a livelihood. The government is going to censor your speech as a comedian. Like, holy cow, have we lost the plot, folks? I don't know a ton about Charlie Kirk other than some of the most heinous things he said. But I believe, and I've been told by my conservative friends, that he is someone who cherished the First Amendment and understood that its most important purpose was to protect unpopular speech, right? And he was somebody who was engaging in some quarters, things that people wanted to hear, and in other quarters, people didn't want to hear. If the First Amendment doesn't apply to speech you disagree with, then we are truly lost.
Well, I want to agree with you, but I just have to ask myself, if this had happened instead to Sean Hannity or Nick Fuentes or any of those other folks, would Charlie Kirk be doing just that? Would he be saying, hey, wait a minute, we got to stand up for the First Amendment instead? Right now, one of the few people I've seen doing that is Tucker Carlson, of all people. Once again, like Liz Cheney and other things, when I realize that I'm on the same side of an issue as Tucker Carlson, we are living in the crazy times.
Yeah, crazy is certainly one way to put it. I'm trying to see if I have it here. I do not have Mr. Carlson's quote, but I agree with him too. What he is saying is, when the government controls what you think and what you can say, then we are truly lost. And so that's where we find ourselves today. And that's the long answer to, how you doing, Joe?
I think that Tony's got a new one. He puts up on YouTube, what's the state of the dumpster fire today? That's my new, how you doing? That's a good candidate for it, perhaps. He also says, my wife asked last night, so when do we go? You look back in history and wonder why people didn't get out. Are we there now? I honestly didn't know the answer. And I mean, again, I'm not trying to be flippant about it. I love my country. It's worth fighting for. But yeah, my passport's up to date.
And my answer to Tony and to you and to anyone else is we need people of good conscience who are patriotic Americans who believe in this country's first principles, like, you know, equal justice under the law. Yeah. We need to stay and we need to turn things around. We've been in dark times before. We are in a dark time now, and America will find a way.
Back with more with Joe Zepecki and a few final notes and news from Lake Wissota right after this on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.